Hey everyone, and welcome to the Sunny Go One Piece podcast. On this episode, we're going to be getting into episodes 462 through 464, which will cover manga chapters 553 through 555. And the war is now in full swing as we get to see some of the heavy hitters on both sides start to go at it. Alright, so synopsis. The battle is in full swing with the full force of the Whitebeard Pirates pressuring the Marines to make it to Ace, and it's an all-out brawl between some of the most powerful people in the world as we see the Whitebeard commanders make their move with the Shichibukai and the Admiral stepping up to defend. Moving on to the differences, there are only a couple of them. I think there are a lot of little minor ones, but the two big ones that I found was the whole scene on the Marine ship with Luffy and the others is pretty much all filler. The manga immediately continues on from where the flashback leaves off and shows the result of Whitebeard's initial attack. It doesn't return to the canon material until pretty much halfway through the episode when the tsunami arrives, and so that entire section is just drawn out and added in. The second difference is the anime adds a couple extra scenes where Sengoku orders an artillery strike after Jozu blocks Mihawk's slash and Kizaru monologues to himself a bit before going in for his attack. In the manga, it just immediately cuts to Kizaru coming out of nowhere to attack Whitebeard and Marco coming in to block that. Yeah, with those being the only real differences that I found, let's get into the episodes themselves. So first off, to begin, this episode I think it's pretty telling how much of a family the Whitebeard Pirates are. When they don't blame Ace or even acknowledge the fact that Ace ignored their warnings when he decided to go after Blackbeard despite the dangers. I think they act like they remember the events differently, not just to make Ace not feel bad, but also it seems to be heavily implied that Whitebeard had cultivated such a deep culture in his crew of never harming one another that it was inevitable that Ace was going to go avenge Thatch, and it's small things like that that really make each crew very distinct and feel unique. It just adds to the immersion with there being so many different kinds of captains and crews and different cultures on each ship. Then slowly we see the aftershock of Whitebeard's initial attack from the point of view of Luffy's gang. But I can't help but point out Galdino here. What is he grabbing onto when trying not to be blown away? Like, he's clearly holding Buggy's lower body that is crossing its legs to hang on. But when you look at it, how he's clutching it, he's got his arms around Buggy's, like, dong and nuts. Like, I don't know what else you can really interpret from that. He's just, like, grabbing his nuts. It's pretty funny when you really look at it. Anyways, like I mentioned in the last episode, though, we finally learn what Whitebeard's fruit is, which is the Guragura no Mi. As they translate it, it's the Tremor Tremor fruit, which is the power to summon earthquakes, essentially. Personally, I always hated that translation. Like, Tremor Tremor fruit, it makes it sound like the fruit is less intimidating than it should be. I always prefer the Quake Quake fruit. Or if they really wanted to be more true to the onomatopoeia, perhaps the Rumble Rumble fruit would have also worked too. But that's just kind of a small nitpick on my part. When Sengoku says that the Guragura no Mi has the ability to destroy the world, you know that he's not just talking in terms of hyperbole with that fruit. It very well is possible to destroy the world as they know it if he went too far with his abilities. Since that could pretty much destabilize, like, the Earth's crust or even the core, causing untold geological destruction with natural disasters. And, yeah, with power levels, with earthquakes, tsunamis, and even volcanic eruptions, he's, like, literally a walking weapon of mass destruction. Although I will say, there does seem to be a limit to Whitebeard's power in terms of, like, how much he can apply, because Even with his power, towards the end of this arc, you kind of see what the limit of his powers really are. But then again, there may be more to it. But after seeing this, you now begin to understand what a Yonko level pirate is, as well as why Whitebeard is considered the strongest man in the world, and the one person close enough to the One Piece and becoming the Pirate King. One thing, however, though, you might be wondering is why, with all this power and such a vast fleet, hasn't he found the One Piece yet? Well, there's a reason that we'll eventually find out why it's so hard to find the One Piece, and I'll get into that in the spoiler section, but that's definitely a thought that crossed my and a lot of people's minds after seeing Whitebeard and Marineford. It's like, why has he, throughout his entire life so far, not been able to find the One Piece? Because clearly, it seems like his crew wants to make him the Pirate King, and it seems like that's a goal. I don't know if that was necessarily a goal for Whitebeard himself, but it does seem like the crew's goal is that, because many of them basically profess that they want to make Whitebeard the next Pirate King. Now, immediately we see the power of the Guragura fruit with an all-encompassing tsunami that looks like it's about to engulf the entire base. But of course, the only man who can possibly save them all steps in, and Aokiji displays his immense power by using his Ice Age attack and freezes everything, and nonchalantly just takes Whitebeard's attack and reforms himself. I also gotta take a moment to talk about how much I love how Oda chose to visualize the Guragura no Mi. Like, the visual of him essentially punching the air and cracking the void space is so cool. And when he does it with both arms, it's such an iconic, like, pose at this point. Despite Whitebeard not having that much screen time, really, it's a real testament to just how visually striking this power and this character is. However, the thing to kind of note about this power is that it's kind of a double-edged sword, in the sense that if not controlled or used skillfully, it can easily hurt your own forces, as it kind of just goes everywhere as an earthquake does. It isn't just affecting one or a few targets, it affects an entire area and won't hurt anyone in that range indiscriminately. And so we do see later on that Whitebeard is able to sort of contain it to a small space, but I'd imagine that that takes a little bit of skill to do. When this fighting starts, very unusually, Mihawk is the first one to step forward among the Shichibukai. You would think he was probably the second least anxious to step into the battle behind Hancock. And this gets the attention of everyone, as Mihawk is known as the greatest swordsman in the world, but also because he's very known for just kind of doing things on a whim and not really pressing the issue. Vista, the swordsman and the fifth commander of the Whitebeard Pirates, obviously wants to try his might against the best. And I forgot where I read this. It was either in SBS or maybe it was actually in the story itself. But Vista is considered to be the third strongest swordsman in the world, I believe, at this point, with probably Shanks being number two, I would think. But anyways, getting back to Mihawk, instead of actually wanting to fight Whitebeard, it seems like Mihawk wants to more so measure himself against the literal strongest being in the world. And that's his sort of motivation to sort of step forward and try and attack him. And it creates this incredible flip on the power dynamic where the once thought invincible Shichibukai are now the weaker beings compared to a Yonko emperor. And by extension, makes Luffy and Zoro seem even smaller in an ever-growing world. And I also love that in the midst of the battle, Tashigi has the time to give Smoker and us a sword lesson on Yoru, or Knight, which is Mihawk's sword, as one of the incredibly rare 12 Supreme Grade swords. The first one we've actually seen in the series, but we've technically now seen two of these, and it's been staring us in the face, and that's Whitebeard's weapon, is also part of the 12 Supreme Grade swords, the Murakumogiri. And technically, it's not a sword, though. It's more of a pole arm, referred to as a Naginata. He unleashes this massive slash straight at Whitebeard, but then gets blocked not by Whitebeard, but we get to see another one of his prominent commanders, the third commander, Diamond Jozu, who seems to have the power to turn his whole body into diamond. We're not actually told what his devil fruit is, but eventually we will go on to learn that it is called the Kirakira no Mi, which is an onomatopoeia for sparkling. Kizaru then makes his move on Whitebeard with the Yasakani no Magatama, literally translates to sacred comma shaped jewel. I, however, like the Crunchyroll and I believe Viz also uses this translation, the Yasakani sacred jewel. It's a lot easier to say, but it is easily blocked by Marco this time, and we see he's got an insane devil fruit ability as well, and he's engulfed in blue flames. This here, we get to see a devil fruit type that is even rarer than Logia fruits, as we get our first glimpse into the concept of the mythical zone type fruits, which blew everyone's collective mind out of the water. Marco has the Toritori no Mi model phoenix, or the bird fruit model phoenix, and this power is insane. as he seems to not only be able to control flames similar to Ace, but can fly and heal himself since, well, he's a phoenix. This is an incredibly powerful fruit and is quite the game changer. Like, I distinctly recall when this concept was first revealed, people went into overdrive coming up with other potential mythical animals that could become zone-type fruits. I mean, to this day, people are still floating ideas on other mythical zone fruits that could potentially come up in the series. We've only had two interactions so far, but watching these fights and the things that people are capable of, it really sets in just how far outmatched Luffy and the Straw Hats really were, up at least till the point they were blown away by Kuma. These guys are fighting on a completely different type of level. As we see, Marco is not only able to tank Kizaru's hit, but also knock him back with ease, being able to actually touch him, no doubt with the use of Haki. At this point, I remember thinking, even if Luffy arrives, what is he going to be able to do against these absolute freaks? The difference seems to be like the difference between Luffy and a normal human being. Luffy seems like a normal human being compared to these guys, which is insane. It's quite the shock and awe as you watch this battle. It's also pretty ballsy of Oda essentially blow his load a little early on in terms of power and the pinnacle of strength in the world of One Piece. Because if you show all these insane cool things, now where do you go from? And how do you maintain a sense of growth and progression as well as just, you know, continuing spectacle going forward? But Oda didn't need to worry about that because he's so damn creative. It seems like he has an endless amount of new abilities and story threads to introduce that will not be overshadowed by the insanity he's showing right here. And if Marco and Jozu's intro weren't enough, in this same episode, we're finally shown the might of the final admiral, Akainu, as Jozu absurdly throws an iceberg that would put the one that sank the Titanic to shame. I mean, you watch that moment, and the iceberg is massive. It's bigger than that entire plaza. And Akainu punches through the iceberg with a massive volcanic magma fist, which then causes it to rain down fiery magma rocks from the sky. And Whitebeard just casually catches one and just blows it out like a birthday candle. And he even mentions that. And you gotta hand it to Oda for his fun yet effective visual storytelling here. He perfectly and very efficiently shows what each character's powers are, as well as showing us what kind of combatant they are without very much dialogue to drag the momentum of the battle down, which is absolutely key when dealing with this many characters, and especially new characters. This easily had the potential to just drag, completely halting the pace of this, if every time someone showed up, they had to explain who that person is in relation to everyone else, as well as their powers. However, as good as the storytelling is, the animation quality definitely lets it down in some parts a little bit. I will give Toei props for the big moments and flashy parts. They're definitely well animated, but because of how stretched thin they are, they really have to cut some corners in many of the other parts, like when general smaller skirmishes are occurring between some of the lesser known characters, often defaulting to still images of action shots instead of full motion. Now, I can't really fault the animators for this, as I know they're definitely on a crunch here due to Toei's crazy production schedule that they make One Piece adhere to. So, you know, props to them, but yeah, it's still also kind of disappointing. We get some interesting cutaways and moments for the rest of the episode. The one I want to highlight in particular is we finally get to see Vice Admiral Onigumo's Devil Fruit, and it appears to be his own spider fruit, which we probably should have figured out from his name, since Onigumo is literally demon spider. Oni is Japanese for ogre or demon, and Gumo or Kumo is spider. It changes to that G sound when it has a prefix added to it. And yeah, we see him sprout spider legs out of his back, kind of like the Iron Spider suit, but they're wielding a sword in each of those hands, or I guess legs, and giving him sort of the eight sword style or Hachitoryu kind of harkening back to Hachi with his Roktoryu or six sword style. Now, his devil fruit is never named as far as I can remember, and it hasn't been named yet even in this current part of the series, all the way as far as chapter 1100. But it can go one of two ways. Either it's called the Mushimushi no Mi model spider, or maybe even a model of a specific spider like model tarantula, with mushi meaning bug in Japanese, or it could just straight up be its own thing and be called the Kumokumo no Mi, aka the spider fruit. Now, given the fact that we actually have seen more information later on, I do think it's the latter. And I guess I'll kind of maybe mention this in the spoiler section. Then we also cut to Kobe and Helmeppo as they're completely overwhelmed by the level of combat they're witnessing. And it's hard not to blame them, as it wasn't just a few months ago that they were just weaklings and still in training. I do love that they're still here, but it really makes you wonder what they can possibly do against monstrosities like the Whitebeard Pirates. But yeah, I enjoy seeing the war from their perspective because they are sort of the audience surrogate. You know, they get to see and experience the war from a normal person's standpoint. Now, speaking of monstrosities, Whitebeard had one hell of a monster up his sleeve as a massive giant comes approaching from the seas. One a size that we've only seen once before, and it turns out that there is a reason for that, as it is a descendant of the monstrous Orz. This time it's actually still alive, and kind of on the nose, his name is Little Orz Jr. And technically, he's apparently the third one in line, so there was his father, and I guess the Orz that we see in Thriller Bark was technically its grandfather, because as you can see on his ship, it says Orz the Third. So he's like Orz Jr. Jr. Of course, seeing this, Moria is just salivating at replacing his Orz, the one that the Straw has defeated. And honestly, I was pretty shocked to see Orz Jr. here. Of course, due to how game-changing he is on the battlefield, but the way Moria talked about Orz during Thriller Bark, he made it sound like Orz, like sort of like these continent-puller giants, only existed in ancient times and were extinct by now, so I was surprised to see one still alive, to be honest. I think one thing that kind of strikes me now especially is what's funny about this, compared to the first Orz, the zombie Orz that we see, as formidable as Orz Jr. is, he doesn't feel nearly as threatening in the face of the people like the Admirals or the Shichibukai, compared to what he felt like when the Straw Hats were going up against the zombie Orz. And it just kind of goes to show how much of a gap in terms of strength and power these guys have compared to the Straw Hats. It's always such a strange yet interesting feeling when you see that, you know, that there's this whole world of characters that are infinitely stronger than your main characters. And I know it's more commonplace in anime, but with One Piece, that gap just seems so crazy large. And going back to the Shichibukai, we finally get to see Hancock actually in full-out combat, and it caught me off guard just how strong she really is. At first, just looking at her, while she is insanely tall, between her powers and appearance, it just doesn't signify overwhelming power like the other Shichibukai are. But she is proving why she is among the Shichibukai, as she is a powerhouse as well. With physical martial arts on par with Sanji, mastery over haki, and her terrifying use of her metal powers, this power is actually more fearsome than I first thought, as she can turn people to stone just by hitting them. And given her agile and quick hand-to-hand combat skills, she not only can hurt you, but basically cripple or even kill you because the stone just starts to shatter the minute she hits you. In addition to the fact, she's got a whole host of ranged attacks as well with her metal, like arrows and her metal beam. It's insane and would be incredibly difficult to fight against. Like, Hancock, after watching this, you're just like, she is so cool. And you just want to see more of her combat. Moving from one Shichibukai to another, with Kuma now stepping up to see him unleash an Ursa's Shock on Orz Jr. And it's just one insane powerhouse after another. Like, this is precisely one of the reasons why Marineford is so damn well remembered and highly thought of. You get to see all these crazy powerful characters just go nuts on each other, and you can unleash their full power and just see what they're capable of. It's the equivalent of like a kid taking their toys and just coming up with like absurd matchups with characters that have no business fighting each other. In addition, you kind of get to see them do some crazier things since the story doesn't need them to hold them back and give their main characters plot armor as if they were going up against the Straw Hats. And again, you're just seeing how far apart in terms of strength these guys are compared to where the Straw Hats are, just with this moment of Kuma obliterating Orz Jr. without so much as breaking a sweat, whereas the entire crew barely took down the zombie Orz together. And I will say though, the whole thing with building up Orz and Ace's friendship, as well as trying to create this sort of emotional weight when Orz Jr. is ultimately taken down, kind of fell flat for me personally. I know this worked for a lot of people, but I just didn't really feel much emotion since we'd only just met Orz like 10 minutes ago. And while the tiny flashbacks were sweet, I still didn't feel much. However, there is one aspect of this flashback that retroactively is very sweet now that we've seen the Wano arc. And speaking of the Wano arc, this is the second time that the land of Wano has been name-dropped, other than being where Yuma and his sword, aka Zoro's new sword, Shusui, was from. But it is quickly becoming one of those islands that keeps getting mentioned that we all anticipate seeing at some point, like Fishman Island and Elbaf. And yeah, it's interesting that Oda has sort of been carefully laying the seeds out for Wano, which won't even happen for like another decade and a half. And it's kind of nuts to see him sort of lay the foundations for Wano here. Now to kind of finish this portion of it, we finally get to see the sociopathic and sadistic Doflamingo finally do his thing. And this was always a big deal for me because we know so little of Doflamingo, and yet he seems like he's the most dangerous of the seven. And after this arc, that opinion doesn't really change. We get to see a bit more of his powers of being able to control people's movement, but then after he slices off Orz Jr.'s leg without any sort of blade, it cemented in my head that I was right in my prediction of his devil fruit that I made when he first appeared. And I know this does not get revealed till way later in the series, but I'm just going to mention it here since I had already predicted this at the time, and I think a lot of people did too. Like, it's so obvious, but just in case, you can kind of skip the next 30 seconds, and if you don't really want to hear this part. But yeah, so I and many others had correctly predicted that he clearly has the Ito Ito no Mi, or the string fruit. He's able to control people by attaching strings to them and control them like marionette puppets. And he sliced off Orz Jr.'s leg, like kind of like how you slice pieces of clay off with wire. And I also love that since Oda is still keeping this a mystery, in the opening theme one day when it's Doflamingo's turn to be showcased, they can't have him do much other than his weird twisted Spider-Man hand gestures because they can't show anything because they don't know what he actually does. Now in closing, Moria irritatingly deals the finishing blow like the leech he is after being lazy while everyone else did everything. And yeah, that's where the episode ends, and we will have to wait till the next podcast to see what other insane things will happen. And it's only been about 3 episodes since the fighting has started, and we've already seen some insane crazy stuff go down. But yeah, it'll be really fun once Luffy and the others arrive, hopefully very soon. That's where we'll end this one, but if you did enjoy this, send me a like or comment. If you want to join me on this journey of rewatching One Piece, please consider subscribing. Check out my Instagram and Twitter account at SunnyGoPodcast for updates when I post new episodes. And as always, I wanted to thank you for taking the time out to listen to the podcast. And yeah, like I mentioned, there will be a short spoiler section for this, but if you're not interested in that, stay safe out there, and I hope to see you on the next episode. Bye! Alrighty, so spoiler section. There's about 3 things I wanted to kind of touch upon, and they're all pretty short. And again, spoiler sections are going to be mostly unscripted, just me rambling. But yeah, the first one is, why hasn't Whitebeard already found the One Piece and become the Pirate King despite how powerful he is? And we do go on to find out that the reason why is because in order to actually get to Laugh Tale, you need to find the 4 road poneglyphs. And yeah, without those, you just can't get there. And it seems like with 2 of them being with the other Yonko pirates, it would be kind of foolish to try and wage war on the other 2. Of course, Luffy does do that to get the road poneglyphs. With the 4th one still being unknown to everyone, nobody knows where that is, except that it's with a man with the burn scar on his face or right. I don't even think it's ever mentioned that it's on the face, but I guess if it's that prominent, I would assume it's on his face. But yeah, that's the simple explanation of why Whitebeard still hasn't found it, or why Shanks or anyone hasn't found it. The second thing I kind of quickly wanted to touch upon is the assumption of what Onigumo's devil fruit is. And most likely, the reason why I would err on the side of the Kumo Kumo no Mi model something is the fact that we actually did get a named Kumukubo no Mi in Black Maria with Kaido's sort of Tobiroppo, and her fruit was called the Kumukubo no Mi model Rosa Miguel Gravogelli. Like, it's a very hard one to say, and it's a very long one. So yeah, I would imagine that Onigumo's fruit is going to be Kumukubo no Mi something, or model something. Now, the last thing I wanted to mention is probably my favorite thing, and I only just noticed this on this rewatch because obviously Wano just concluded, but the whole Ace learning how to make straw umbrella hats, and I don't know why I never put this together, but why rewatching this and seeing that Ace, you know, goes through and makes this, you know, straw umbrella hat for Orz Jr., and the connection is so sweet because he learns it from Tama in Wano. He even references this. And the fact that Tama is the one that taught Ace, not only do we get that heartbreaking backstory for Tama where she's basically making these hats to try and support herself after her parents, both her parents passed away and she's orphaned, and before she gets picked up by Hitetsu. During all of that, we see in the brief flashback of when Ace meets Tama for the first time, we get that really small flash during the montage of Tama teaching Ace how to make these hats. And so, yeah, that level of connection is just so crazy and it's so sweet. And it's a very bittersweet moment, you know, seeing that both Tama, Ace, and Orz Jr. connected in this way. I mean, the fact that Oda remembered this is incredible because it's such a small detail. Like, you could easily have dropped this line there in Marineford and completely forgotten about it by the time you got to Wano, because the time between the start of Wano and this is, yeah, I think it's like close to, this was what, 2010 when it was aired, and Wano started in about 2015, more like closer to 2018. I mean, that's like 18 years. It's insane how much time passes, and yet Oda still remembered to make sure that he had Ace learn how to make those hats in a very significant way too, with such a significant character in Tama. I just love this detail. I don't know why, but I really love this detail, especially when I noticed it upon this rewatch. But anyways, that's pretty much all the spoilers I wanted to talk about. But thanks for listening, and I hope to see you on the next episode. See ya!